It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Iron County and its northern Wisconsin neighbors are aging more rapidly than other parts of the state. Over 40% of the population in nine counties will be 60 or older by 2035, and that's according to state projections. So as these communities transform, we explore programs in the North Woods to help older adults connect with others and keep their minds active. Call in with your questions, your experiences in these programs, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Wendy Thede is here, co-founder and president of FE University. That's a nonprofit, largely volunteer-driven organization with classes for northern Wisconsin residents 50 and older. Wendy, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. It's great to be here. Thanks for asking me.
Yes, you launched FE University nearly a decade ago now. How do the courses you offer fulfill the mission for mental engagement and social connection?
Well, the classes we offer are, we like to say, college level. They are classes that meet up to four times instead of just one. I mean, we learned early on that there's a lot of single programs in the area, but then people go home, they don't visit with one another, and there's no follow-up to the classes. And so that's what we were after. And we have offered to date about 145 classes since 2014. We have 42 different teachers, and we have an email list of 600 students who have taken our classes. So I believe we are reaching our mission. A lot of students say they have met new friends, and of course, we're learning a lot.
I would imagine you are. And I'm just wondering, do you think these courses help prevent some forms of loneliness? Loneliness, you know, sometimes reaching epidemic proportions, some people say.
Yeah, I do believe that. But you have to think that we're really targeting some younger retirees, and I mean, there are some shut-ins, of course, and we don't provide transportation to the classes. However, we do have a few Zoom classes now, which started in COVID times, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we have, it prevents loneliness. I also read an article that said people's brains are at their peak between the ages of 60 and 70, and the second highest group of peak brain power, if you will, is between 70 and 80. And after that is 50 to 60. And below that, they don't know anything yet, I guess.
Hungry minds. So yeah. What are some examples of popular courses?
Well, the most popular, because we live in northern Wisconsin in the lake area and in the woods, and a lot of people are retiring here that don't know the area yet, the ecology and natural resource classes have been very popular. We have one instructor who's taught several classes for us that everybody knows is John Bates, and his classes have been very popular. Second to that, I would say history classes, Native American, anything about Native Americans has been extremely popular. Geology has been popular.
What's been your favorite class?
Well, I knew you were going to ask that, and I've taken so many good classes, but I have to say the one I'm taking right now is right up there at the top. It's on Lake Superior, the geology, ecology, economy, and water rights. And we have three fabulous presenters who are walking us through this, and that's been great. Another one I have to tell you about because it was a neighbor. You just kind of start thinking of who could teach a class. And we have a neighbor who was a defensive coordinator for the National Football League for not only the Packers, but the Bears and the Washington Redskins. And he taught a class on inside the NFL. Now, where can you get classes like this? We've had some on with an executive from the World Bank teaching about foreign aid, all the ins and outs of foreign aid.
You mentioned you have about 42 instructors. How do you find them? And you know, who, where, what type, you know, what walks of life do they come from?
They come from all walks of life. We live in an area of retirees, a lot of people moving up here all the time. And of course, they bring with them their expertise. And most of them are just more than willing to give back and teach about their topics. And so it's just a matter of networking. You know, I ask one person, do you know, well, here's another example. I asked a lady the other day that I saw in an exercise class. She had taught for us, and she said, well, I don't really have anything else to teach. But then she contacted someone else, and believe it or not, we're going to have a class on raising chickens. So, you know, we have everything from one coming up on the Big Bang Theory. We've had the witch panic of the 16th and 17th centuries. And we have just completed one on rule by strong men, the legacy of fascism. And now we have chickens. So, I mean, it's just been amazing. It's been a wonderful experience for me to have all these people willing to come forward and teach about their classes. And they enjoy it because our students are not looking for credits. They're there because they want to be.
There, yes. Wendy Thede is president of FE University in Northern Iron County, offering programs to seniors and lifelong learning. Join in with your questions, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Now to a region where the population is aging more rapidly. We discuss efforts in Iron County to create coursework for older adults, sparking interest in a range of subject areas and helping people stay intellectually stimulated as they age. Call in with your questions. Share your efforts to learn new things in your 50s and beyond. 800-642-1234. Wendy Thede is here, co-founder and president of FE University in Iron County. Wendy, how could four-year universities, colleges, and other spaces for learning become more welcoming to older students?
The problem we found with, for example, auditing classes at local universities is, number one, most retirees don't want to commit to a full semester. It's too long. And secondly, it's not as affordable. Our classes are very inexpensive. We do pay a stipend, small stipend, to our teachers, and then we charge a little bit for the students. So I guess to answer your question directly, shorter classes and more affordable might be a good opportunity. And you need someone to look around the area and connect, network with potential teachers. I want to say one thing, though, before it's too late. I know a lot of your listeners are not in Iron County. We have classes. I mean, we attract students from a wide area, not just Iron County, but we also are still offering a couple classes on Zoom, and we have a few coming up. So if people go to the website, feuniversity.org, they can see that. And I want to also, I'm very excited, we have a retired Russian history professor from Lawrence University, and he's taught a couple of Russian history classes, and he's agreed to teach to give us some background on Ukraine in the fall.
Really, so really important and timely topic. You brought up cost, and you know, if someone can't afford to take classes, as many seniors are on a fixed income, do you have any suggestions for free things someone can do to keep their mind sharp?
Well, we do offer scholarships for our classes, so they don't have to pay, or they can pay very little. But yes, there's always programs at local libraries. That would be my first suggestion, I guess, go to the libraries.
How are you using community centers and public spaces for your coursework?
Well, we move the classes all around. We use the Iron County Boardroom in Hurley. We are using the Hurley School Auditorium and the Hurley School Woodshop for a class coming up. We use the Mercer Library and the Mercer Community Center. And now we are expanding a little bit out of the community into Manitowish Waters. We're going to use the Manitowish Waters Library. And we have our very first class coming up in Ashland, which is in Ashland County, because we have people coming all the way. And I don't know if you're familiar with the area, but Minocqua is quite a ways south of Mercer, and Washburn and Bayfield are quite a ways north. And we have people coming from all of those areas, and even Rhinelander and Eagle River. So we've decided to expand a little bit, continue, like I said, with Zoom and also using some other spaces. We've had good reception. We don't have a building.
Wendy, so in our last few moments together, how did you figure out how to do this and put all these programs together and make this really work for the broader area of Iron County?
I like I said, I saw that there were a lot of one-time programs and we needed more, I felt. And I had seen something like this when I was in graduate school at Cardinal Stritch, I guess. And so I don't know, it just was such an easy thing to do because of so many students. I did do a little survey before we started to see if people would be interested in college level classes. And I got great response to that.
And the rest is history.
Yeah.
Wendy, yes. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you. I enjoyed it.
Wendy Thede is president of FE University based in Iron County. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Wisconsin is among 20 states where the federal minimum wage of $7.25 per hour applies and has not been changed since 2009. We discuss Governor Tony Evers' renewed proposal in the state budget to raise it and what it would mean for our labor market. Join in with your questions, your experiences in a minimum wage job at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Laura Dresser is here, Associate Director of COWS, formerly known as the Center on Wisconsin Strategy at UW-Madison. Laura, welcome back to the Ideas Network. Hi, Laura. Can you hear us?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. So what would... who would benefit from increasing Wisconsin's minimum wage to $10.25 an hour?
Well, COWS has long written about the minimum wage and who it helps. And I think that the narrow and first question of who it helps is the folks that are closest to the labor, the wage floor. We looked a few years ago at who would win by moving the wage to $15 an hour, past what Tony Evers has proposed, but sort of on a slower scale than many states have. And with that analysis, we found that 3 in 10 workers in the state would see wages go up. That's because people who are below or right at the wage floor have wage increases, but even people slightly above the wage floor get increases as well. So those are the direct beneficiaries of a raise in the minimum wage. And those workers are more likely to be women. They're more likely to be the state's Black and brown workers. They're more likely to be in service jobs. And so it really brings the labor standard up for workers at the bottom of the labor market. And that means that it kind of helps equalize some of the worst inequalities we have.
with the proposal here, what would the impact be on people who rely heavily on tips for their wages?
So I'm pretty sure I didn't dig into his proposal. I didn't see a suggested on the tip minimum. This is a place where Wisconsin really stands out. Right now, a tipped worker is only guaranteed or paid $233 an hour by the employer that tips are intended or are required, in fact, to make it up to the minimum wage. But this is a place where, labor standards are pretty low in this state. Right now in the state of Minnesota, right across the border, a tipped worker gets over $10 an hour plus their tips. And in Illinois, they get $7 an hour plus their tips. So you can see that, if you're trying to decide to be a wait staff on which side of the Mississippi you're going to pick, obviously Minnesota is offering better jobs, especially tipped jobs.
As we see businesses raise their hourly rate to compete to fill jobs, and we see banners outside their businesses as what their wage is, does that temper the potential impact of a minimum wage hike because businesses have already done it based on market pressures?
Yeah, it's important to note, right, that even 2 years ago when we did this analysis of who would win with the minimum a wage increase of $15 an hour, I think we'd find lower numbers now. We know that the floor is coming up because workers are demanding more wages, because labor markets are intense and tight, and because the conversation, I think, that fast food workers started in 2012 with a demand for $15 in a union, which at the point was sort of like, how could you even ask for this much? And now has become, in some ways, at least if you're going to advertise you have an opening, you're not going to put a number below $15 an hour. It still matters, though. It isn't quite as pressing because the wages have moved up. It still matters a lot, though, to have a strong floor, because some workers who maybe have less access to information or are less secure in their rights on the job, that's when the minimum wage begins to come back into play. And as you said, for those tipped workers, it really matters.
Considering the forces of inflation that we've seen in day-to-day life, would $10.25 an hour qualify as a livable wage or enough to cover essential needs like housing and food?
$10.25, just for those of you, like, even if the worker gets full-time, full year hours, that's $20,000 a year of pay. And I think almost all the listeners will say, living on $20,000, is that your only income? Especially if you've got a kid or someone who needs your support in some way, it's just not a livable wage. It's closer than $7.25. And so I don't think we'll get tomorrow to a standard at our minimum that is truly supports independent living, the cost of housing and transportation yet. But we definitely are not there with $7.25 an hour, and without some attention to lifting this labor floor and keeping in touch with neighboring states like Illinois and Minnesota, I think Wisconsin continues to let the bottom of the labor market just stagnate.
Laura Dresser is here, Associate Director of a UW-Madison Center that studies economic and social issues, as we talk about Governor Evers' renewed proposal to hike the state's minimum wage. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Laura, this year, 26 states and Washington, D.C. hiked their minimum wages due to new laws or automatic cost of living policies. That's the Economic Policy Institute keeping track there. What are researchers learning in places where the minimum wage is going up?
I think we've seen, the great kind of experimentation actually sort of is rooted in that 2012 Fight for 15, the birth of Fight for 15, then that turned into innovation at the state level, as you're noting, California and New York, but, increasing numbers of states really moving their minimum wages. I think Most of the research suggests that the states that have raised their minimum wages have labor markets that are as dynamic or more dynamic, more growth in their low-wage labor markets than the states that haven't. This has to do with a lot of things, but not least of which is that, you know, partly what happens when people, when the minimum wage is raised, is that people who work in those jobs have a little more money to maybe buy a few more services. And so there's some dynamics like that where it actually can be a virtuous cycle. The other thing that I think really matters is that as the wage comes up, workers are more able to stay in their positions. They maybe face less chaos because of, the car breakdown or a fall through on their childcare plans, because they have a little more stability in their income, but they also have a little more, they have a little more reward from work. And so there's less turnover. And so businesses and employers and workers both kind of gain from that in ways that maybe surprise employers or aren't predictable by them.
And, you know, you're talking about employers here. Republican lawmakers have rejected a minimum wage hike proposed by Evers in his first two-year budget. And, you know, opponents have said their concerns that would hurt businesses or force staffing cuts. How valid are those worries in Wisconsin's current economy?
Well, I mean, as kind of the previous conversation said, it is a little less pressing right now than 2 years ago in terms of the sheer number of people that would be impacted. But I think one way to look at it is to think about what's going on in the state of Minnesota, where their connection to labor and their total labor force is growing more quickly than here. They have a much higher minimum wage. They've indexed that to inflation. They've raised the tip minimum, and they still have a more dynamic labor market than we do. There's just not very strong evidence, in spite of Republican or conservative claims about how this will ruin the economy. There's just, you don't find that when states do this, things fall apart. I think the other thing is that this is a really popular policy. In the legislature, it's divisive. It's understood to be Governor Evers' policy, and I think the conservatives aren't as supportive. But anytime you put this on a ballot, in Missouri, in Florida, anytime you put raising the minimum wage on the ballot, conservative and liberal voters support the policy. It's one of those places where there's a lot of agreement in the population, but it's hard to get it through in a state house.
The governor in his budget seeks to set aside funds to further study the minimum wage. And I'm just wondering what further study does it need? What research is yet to be done on the minimum wage?
I think, sometimes people want to see it for here. So I think there's a lot of strong evidence that's directly relevant already. But I suppose employers and even advocates right here want to talk about the dynamics here. So I suppose thinking about who is impacted, how you do the outreach. One of the things that's really important about raising the minimum wage is making sure that everybody who should be covered by it knows the new wage, and workers who are, as I said earlier, maybe have less information, less literacy, less access or security in their labor rights. Technically someone who is does not have documentation still has every labor right, but it's hard for workers to feel like they can enforce that rights because they feel so vulnerable. So thinking about how to get the information on a wage increase to those who really need it, it can be one of the things that's important to study.
Laura, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Laura Dresser is Associate Director of COWS, formerly known as the Center for Wisconsin Strategy at UW-Madison. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.